The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now, you're multitasking. But what if you could also be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. So multitask right now. Get your quote now at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.
I mean, everything's not beautiful right now, but we're fighting through that. That happens in this game.
I mean, it was just execution. I mean, I say it all the time, but we have guys open, and if we're on the same page with me and the receivers with the routes, and then I throw it and hit the right spot, we can move the ball on pretty much any coverage. We have answers for versus everything. But that you've seen in every game pretty much that there's been times where we kind of stall out and we don't execute, or I throw the ball and I don't hit the right spot, or the receiver doesn't see it the same way that I do, or penalties or turnovers. So, I mean, I know in this league it's kind of showing that it's kind of happened week after week these last few weeks, but I think we're going to snap out of it and we'll find a way to start executing, and then when we do, we'll be a tough offense to stop.
Contrary to all evidence, the Chiefs continue to be optimistic, and they win a game last night that was not impressive. It was not a blowout. They didn't come close to covering. They got a little help from the officials on the final drive to secure the victory. It's not what we're used to. We're not accustomed to this, and they keep talking and they keep talking, but on the field, Chris, it really isn't changing. Good morning. It's PFT Live on Peacock, NBCSN Re-Air. Hello to our good friends in the UK and Ireland enjoying the program on Sky Sports, listening to the podcast, wherever you may be. Welcome back, Christopher, a.k.a. Man with the Small Head.
Hey,
great
thank
to
you.
See you.
Great to see
How
you.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing good, man. How are you? Everything's good. Yeah, you're right. I mean, you kind of said it with the game. It's underwhelming from what we expect from the Kansas City Chiefs. No doubt about it. Great, you know, hey, listen, you want to give the Giants a little credit? Good game plan? Yes, certainly. But, like, I mean, you know, hey, the story of the day is kind of what you said. I mean, this is, I just think the Chiefs we're going to have to get used to for now. That's where they're at. They're not like a great football team. There's too many flaws throughout, and like the days of like them just dominating teams and, you know, running through defenses, it's over right now. It is. I mean, you know, yeah, great first drive of the game, but you know, we see that play right there, way too hard. I think he was throwing that to Josh Gordon. I mean, it was way off target too. So it's all of that, let alone mistakes they make. It's just there's a lot of issues, and we can dive into it wherever you want, Mike.
Well, I mean, there are a lot of issues. Yeah. It's almost hard to pick and choose where to begin because this just seems like a different team. They're wearing the same uniforms. They have most of the same players.
Right.
But something doesn't seem right with the Chiefs. And you said that the Giants, you know, had a great game plan. They're just doing what everybody else is doing.
Exactly. Well, it's been like that for a long time now. You know, it's been like that. You know, we could dive back into the middle of last year almost to at least the teams that had some of the personnel to figure it out. But you're right, 100%, Mike.
And I'm reluctant to say this because I don't want this to be a get off my lawn type of a thing, but you know, that first drive, they do the play where Travis Kelce takes the snap and he flips it back to Patrick Mahomes. That stuff's great when you're kicking the crap out of everybody.
Sure.
That stuff's great when you don't have more fundamental issues. But I look at it this way. every minute in practice that you spend on the French pastry plays, as they used to call them when I was a kid, you know, the special stuff, the razzle dazzle, the things that are above and beyond your meat and potatoes offense, that's less time you can spend on fixing the issues with your offense. So I'd rather they not be practicing these. And I know that it's fun, but you got to earn your fun. And they're not earning their fun now. And there's just something about those plays that are grating while the Chiefs are struggling. They're great when everything is working fine. But it's just, you know, you're showboating while you're dog paddling. And it doesn't seem like this team is good enough to have earned the right to run those kinds of plays, if that makes any sense.
No, it makes sense. I hear where you're coming from right now. You're right. I mean, you look at it and you just go, well, wait, I mean, you know, you guys miss passes we've seen you miss for 3 years. You know, you don't protect well. Mahomes is in and out of the pocket. You know, there's a lot of things that are kind of average to right now with the Kansas City Chiefs offense. So I hear you there, Mike. I do. And you go, well, gosh, I your point is just like, yeah, you don't do the basic things. Let's like, you know, slow down on the razzle dazzle stuff. But, you know, to their defense or however you want to say it, like they got to figure out something. You know, again, there's just nothing to add to the offense right now. What is the Chiefs offense right now? Like, what is it? Like, that's the big thing right now more than anything. I mean, first off, like, Mahomes has lost his magic. Like, he's not as magical as he was the last few years. I don't know what the reasons are, but he's certainly not. You know, you've heard me talk about the foot and the toe. Yeah, I get that. But, you know, like, listen, off-target throws, how many times this year do we need to see him in the pocket where in years past we saw magic plays? Whoa, people hanging on him. Whoa, he's making people miss. Great throw. This year it's like, what? That right there? It's he's lost the calibration of where people are around him in the pocket and doesn't look or feel as comfortable. So, like, there's that issue. And then, you know, you go like with this stuff right here. I mean, come on. I don't know. Patrick Mahomes in years past, I feel like he throws that pass 50 times. That 48 of them, 49 of them are like walk-in touchdowns. It's just off, let alone then the offense has nothing to offer to go with it, Mike. And that's where you just go, okay, wait, what do we have to do with the Chiefs right now? Oh, Tyreek Hill deep, and then, oh, wait, Travis Kelce 7 yards underneath. I mean, after that, what else is there really to worry about or defend? I mean, I think you see where I'm going here. Do you kind of see what I'm talking about, or at least the issues I have?
I see what you're saying. No, yeah. I see what you're saying. And, you know, they had high hopes for Josh Gordon. He has yet to provide a return on the risk that they took by bringing him in. And, you know, back to that play on the first drive, it epitomizes where they currently are.
No doubt.
Because it looked great. It looked familiar. And then once Travis Kelce flipped it to Patrick Mahomes, who was coming in motion left to right, there was nothing there. There's just nothing there.
Right.
So, I still wonder about that toe, although at times last night he seemed to be moving better. There was one play, and they didn't mention this on the broadcast. He ran out of bounds, and at the end of the play,
yeah, he jumped up in the air and acted like something was weird, right?
Yes.
I know the play,
yes.
Mike. I know it.
It seemed like something was wrong with his foot.
Right.
And I don't know if he
convinced himself, like, I'm okay.
He jumped his way through it. Right. I don't know what it was. I don't know what kind of rehab exercise entails jumping up and down like that, and then all of a sudden it snaps back into place. But it felt like
he limped a little after.
Injured himself.
Yeah.
Yes.
I know.
But they didn't mention it, and I thought I was seeing things.
Right. Well, listen, I know I'm the one leading the charge on that, where it doesn't look the same. To me, it's a big reason why I don't think he's as magical, because he's kind of lost his natural explosion and ability to, you know, wiggle around and make people miss. It's not the same. So therefore, you know, his bearings are off in the pocket when people are on him. Like, yeah, okay, you know, straight ahead speed, certainly. I don't know if there's a huge difference. I think there is. But, you know, even on the last play, Mike, he runs to the left and he takes the sack, right? I understand. But there's even a part of me that, like, wait, Mahomes last year before the toe injury, the year before that, would have wheeled out of that and gave another look, like knowing no one's there. Do you know the play I'm talking about, right? The last one where he got out to the left and gets hit, right?
And well, they credit him. It's like it didn't. Something seemed wrong with that entire play. Oh, he did the smart thing.
He did the smart thing. I don't know. That's not what I've seen him. Exactly. That's where I'm going. The old Mahomes would have swirled around, waited another second and gone, wait, can I buy one more second? Okay, nothing. Let me throw it away. Right now, you know, yeah, there's something off about his game, let alone, Mike, I always go back to the old adage of like, hey, yeah, you know, they execute and look good on some drives, but like what, you know, there's just not enough to think about with the offense. You look at the other top offenses in football, you know, there's just more than two aspects of it to look at where there's just two players. And you go, well, that's what makes them great. If we got into it with the Bucks, the Rams, the Cowboys, there's just so much more to offer. And the Chiefs right now don't really have an identity and don't have a lot of things to make you think or offer to a defense to make them think is what I guess I'm trying to say.
They still did what they had to do. And I think the tension within Mahomes is, I want the big play. I want the splash play. I want the spectacular thing. But I have to take what they're giving me. Now, what we're perceiving is, even though he's being patient within the confines of exercising patience, something still isn't right to me.
It
surely can't be. We're just kind of sounding this out. And this is one of the reasons why I like doing this, because I know that we're going to have a chance to have a conversation about these issues. Surely it can't be the fact that he doesn't take the deep shots like he used to, and that he has to be patient. Surely that's not what is hampering him, right? The freedom to play the way he used to, and now he can't. That can't be it.
I don't think so either.
They've caught up to him, and I've said this before. Maybe those plays were so amazing because the margin for error was so small. It was the Indiana Jones slide under the door, reach back, grab your hat as the stone hits the ground. That's what made it so exciting. But the moment you lose just the tiniest bit of your dexterity, the door lands on your arm. And I you know, we're rooting for the guy. We want what we had gotten accustomed to, 2018, 2019, 2020. We're trying to figure out, as they are, how to get it back. And it's hard to do within the confines of a season because you're trying to change a tire on a moving car. How much time do you really have, Chris, within a football season? And you can speak to this. Yeah. You lived it. How much time do you have to diagnose what's wrong with you while you're also trying to get ready to marshal the best that you can for the next opponent?
Yeah,
it can't be easy to say we need answers for what's wrong when another train is rolling down the tracks.
No, exactly right. It's hard to fix it all, everything together, let alone, you're worried about the offense and, you know, execution. Well, execution and like what it's led to, Mike, is, you know, something we've talked about last week. You know, again, have they caught up to him? Sure. You know, I still don't think it's the 100% him we've saw. I don't know. People are not going to be able to tell me much different from that. I'm not. But then, like, caught up to the offense, yes. Defense not special, like we've talked about. So there's just so many issues that compound what we're talking about. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, again, I don't know if it's his comfort level or the people caught up to him or the defense or what other phrase to use. But what I do know is he's played the position not true to form, like we talked about a little last week, too. You know, yeah, I mean, Brian Griese showed a few plays from the Tennessee game 2 weeks ago where you just go, man, he's not seeing the field clearly. I don't know what he's thinking about. He even said that, you know, during the telecast. Like, he's thinking, wait, there's no way they'll play that coverage here, so let me go over here and work this side of the field. And they don't play the coverage he expects. He's predetermining things, leaves the pocket too early. You know, there's just one issue after another right now. And to your point, it's very hard to fix all of those things, let alone lead a team, worry about new plays in the offense, and try to be that guy at quarterback with that many issues mounting up and you're in the middle of the season. And they might be able to fix it. I just don't know to what degree. And I'm not expecting, like, to the degree of what we saw, you know, in years past where all of a sudden they become dominant and they're like the greatest show on turf. I don't. Right now I'm just going, I hope they can fix it and get in the playoffs. That's where we're at with the Chiefs, right? I mean, what makes us think they're going to beat any team like in football consistently. I look at it and go, no, I think every team just about in football can play with them consistently. And they're going to have to win a lot of games like this with the way they play on both sides of the ball right now.
In past years, there was nothing to fix.
No.
In past years, there was nothing to fix. We're going to hear from Patrick Mahomes in a minute, but let me try something here. If we can find the play and get the video, it's 12:37 left in the fourth quarter, 2nd and 6 from the Giants 48. That's where
he
the run
the right.
happened, where yeah. he's jumping. I want everyone to come to the same conclusion or not. We'll put it out there for folks to scrutinize. For now, let's put out Patrick Mahomes' words that we can scrutinize on his belief that they used the right approach to get the win last night.
Me personally, I took a kind of a big picture look at it this last week after playing the Titans, and obviously we didn't start the way we wanted to, and I kind of felt like I was trying to make stuff happen that wasn't there. And I think in the game like today, I did a better job of – obviously they're taking away the big shots. I wanted to throw the big shots, especially when we started stalling out some of those drives. But I kind of just kept with the process, kept with the game flow, and trusted in our defense. And they made a lot of stops. We got enough points on the board, and they were able to shut it down at the end of the game.
Just the fact that he's got the temptation, the desire, the urge to take the deep shots in those moments tells you the tension that he's experiencing out there. And you can sense it. It's palpable.
Yep.
I want to get this ball down the field. I want to put the pedal to the metal. I want it to be like it's been in the past because it was fun in the past,
exactly.
And it's not fun like it used to be.
Right.
And I don't know what you do to fix it. And they had an extra day after the Titans to try to work on it, and it wasn't much better. Yeah, they scored 20 points, but it was an inferior team, and they were at home. Now they got the Packers in 5 days. They're waking up this morning saying, hey, we got a win. Hey, we're feeling pretty good. I don't know why they should feel all that good.
Yeah.
And when you consider what's coming, starting with Green Bay with extra time. I mean, you got Green Bay played on Thursday. Packers have 10 days.
Yeah.
And the Chiefs play on Monday. They got 5 days. Oh, man, I that's a better measuring stick. You know, that's the thing. Last night, Giants, I don't know how good of a measuring stick that is. Although the Giants aren't horrible, they seem to find ways to self-inflict wounds on themselves, as you would say.
Yeah.
So right. I don't know how to feel about the Chiefs right now, and I think most people would feel the same way. And look at this.
Yeah.
You know, the Broncos, week 13, okay, fine. The bye's coming up week 12, and I think they're going to need it after playing the Packers, Raiders, and Cowboys. We're going to learn a lot about them over the next three games. When you're playing teams that are 7-1, 5-2, 6-1, three straight weeks, we're going to learn a lot about the Chiefs, Chris.
Yeah, I mean, 100%. I don't know, you know, again, yeah, they're going to be a pain in the butt. It's still Patrick Mahomes and company. I understand that, you know, and certainly not going to count them out. But what I'm getting close to, I guess, is counting out the think that they're going to go on some run and going to end the year, and we're going to look up and go, whoa, look at the Chiefs. You know, they're 13-4, or like they're 12-5. Like, I that's not going to happen to me. That to me is where I've gone past the point of no return. Because, yeah, I mean, you said it. Hey, the Giants, they do things well. Yeah, the Giants. I mean, it goes back to the same story. The game plan's perfect. I mean, They play it right. They're coached to play the right way. They just don't have the players. And, you know, therefore Kansas City's defense got to look somewhat good last night because, hey, the Giants' offensive line is one of the worst in football, period. So that covers a lot of holes, let alone they had a lot of injuries to go along with it. So that kind of gave the Kansas City football team a get-out-of-jail-free card, especially on the offensive side of the ball, because it was a night where their defense could hang in there. But the problem is we've seen so many times this year the defense can hang in there, so you don't know what to expect from them either. And they have their own issues. We talk about the offense. You know, you look at the defense and go, I mean, other than Chris Jones, again, who the hell's there to worry about right now in Kansas City? Tyrann Mathieu's not been the same. Frank Clark is non-existent, and it's just not enough to go around for you to think that they're going to be a dominant football team anytime soon.
Frank Clark turned it on the final drive.
Yes.
There were multiple times last night where it looked like Frank Clark was being held. And, you know, I don't know what it takes to draw a flag or not a flag, because I know there's holding on every play. But when you got the guy coming around the edge toward the quarterback and somebody's got their hands up there and you can see they're grabbing, you know, when they do that. There used to be a time when you had to block like this.
Yeah.
And they changed it back in the 70s where you can put your hands out, but you see a lot of the closed fist grabbing shirt and holding flaps on shoulder pads, and that seemed to be happening to Frank Clark a lot last night. And I know a lot of it happens and it goes on call, but when you see that guy come around the edge, you want to think he's going to be unimpeded to have a shot at the quarterback. Now, I'm very impressed, and I'm happy to report that the control room has found the play that we were talking about. And here's the thing. With all the buildup, it's going to be a major disappointment, but I'm at least happy that they found the play.
I think it's good
and
to show
it. Let's take a look at it, and you be the judge. You, not you, Chris. You out there watching the show, and if you're listening on Sirius or watching the podcast, oh well. But if you're watching, you get to see it. Let's have a look. Well, they can't see it, Pete. How can they see it? I'm sorry. You can only see it if you're watching. Here it is. And Patrick Mahomes, 12:38 to play, rolls to the right, sees nothing there, and then off he goes. And it has a little bit of burst. That's what he, you
right.
know, that's
it's
where he's
weird.
Sitting. And then
holds
he's had a little jump there. Now watch.
Right.
It's like, I'm fine.
Now he's
okay,
limping.
I'm fine.
Right.
I'm fine. And that reminds me of what Robert Sala told us when we interviewed him right after he got the Jets job, after becoming the 49ers defensive coordinator. His advice to the Buccaneers for the Super Bowl was, don't be fooled by the old man limp.
Yeah.
Because he still got it.
But he was telling us that
was
the Super Bowl. Yeah, right, right.
Yeah, that wasn't an okie doke there.
No.
That was serenity now. My foot is fine, or whatever it is. Ankle, foot, toe, whatever. Something, he stepped wrong on something, and he was trying to will his way back through it. That was how I interpreted that body language.
Listen, me too, Mike. I saw it. I've been watching it all year. You know, I've told you, I've had people reach out to me that are somewhat in the know there and have told me I'm on the right track. I mean, again, I don't know where, how close I am, what the issues are. All I know is I am a professional at watching players, studying them. You know me, I'm all into legs and butt and the way the guys look. And to me, there's something off, just a little off. I don't know what it is. I just know I've studied the guy so hard, and you know, coming out in the draft, he was my guy, and I just feel like I know him so well, and I don't see the same guy, let alone I see a look in his eye right now that he doesn't believe he's the same guy. I feel that way too, and I'm not trying to blame it all on him. He's pressing now, of course, because he's trying to create magic. The team's struggling. Nobody can help him out. You know, there's just nothing. There's nothing positive, like, really going on there in Kansas City. So that's where I feel for him. But, like, I'm with you, Mike. I mean, again, there's issues across the board with Kansas City. Nice win, 20-17, way to gut it out. But, come on, we're holding them to, like, top-of-the-league standards, Super Bowl standards, and they're nowhere near that right now.
And I think what really does hurt them is that they've lost that edge. They've lost that magic.
Right.
They've lost that difference that we saw for 3 years, and their opponents
know it.
Have yet to relax. No.
Yeah.
I think their opponents are still on guard for 28 points
sure,
in one quarter.
Sure. Right.
And until people who are playing them start thinking they're not the same, it's going to be even harder because you're still getting the absolute A-plus effort from every defense because it's like, hey, you got to watch. Here's what Mahomes can do. Here's what Tyreek Hill can do. Here's what Travis Kelce can do. Here's what they can do. And they prepare for it. And until some of the players or the coaches who are facing the Chiefs relax a little bit and say they're not who they used to be, it's going to continue to be harder for the Chiefs.
Yeah.
You know? And to the extent that the Chiefs took over the league, and if you're a player on another team, you get sick of hearing about it. It's just human nature. Sick of hearing about the Chiefs. It's always the Chiefs. It's the Chiefs, the Chiefs, the Chiefs. So I think these other teams are taking a little bit of glee in the opportunity to take some of the piss out of the vinegar, if that's not the wrong metaphor.
Florioism.
But regardless.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But I like it. Take some of the, they've done it. And I think that, you know, like the Titans last week, they had to love the fact that they completely throttled that team.
Yeah. That's where I was.
You know, they had to love it.
No doubt. That's where I was going to get, like, I'm not saying you're right. Like, they're still going to get people. It's the Chiefs. They're still going to get, like, team's best shot. You're always going to worry
about. That's my point.
Yeah, you are. I guess what I was trying to say is I think fear has left the other team, though. That I don't know if the fear is quite there the way it used to be. I think teams are walking on the field right now going, wait, we stopped Tyreek Hill going across this way 40 yards, and we stopped Travis Kelce, you know, running a shallow cross or faking the shallow cross and then coming back out or going back out like he's going to run an 8-yard out and then coming back in, then we got him stopped, you know. And, again, I know they tried to run the ball last night, but, again, like I don't know. I mean, I don't know if I'm going to buy into that and go, oh, there's the other element that I see here. Watch out, Kansas City's run game. That's something, you know, again, I just think diversity and schemes – you know, lack of one other guy to think about in their offense right now. Mahomes off his game. Offensive line not as good as they should be. It's just they're easier to defend. And like you said, they've been the kings of the hill for so long that everybody has studied them. People have stolen their plays. But more importantly, everybody has studied them and watched and, like, learned from other teams how to defend them to a degree. And right now they don't have another move on the chessboard that's making anybody think or do anything. And you look at the other top offenses in football, I can give you a whole bunch of other schemes and players other than just two guys that teams have to think about when they play them compared to the Rams or the Bucks. I mean, come on. It's not even comparable what they make you think about compared to the Chiefs right now. And that's where there's a lot of issues on that side of the ball for them.
These next three games are going to tell us a lot because right now the Chiefs are 4-4. So they're going to be 4-7, 7-4, 5-6, or 6-5. And I think that if they win two out of these next three, they have to feel pretty good about themselves going into a Thanksgiving bye. You know, I don't remember many Thanksgiving week byes. This may be a byproduct of the 17-game season, but they're off the entire week of Thanksgiving. And they're either going to be really happy with where they are or they're not. There's not much middle ground. Because I think even if they go, if they do anything other than win the next three, they still have their issues. And it's going to be very hard for them to win the next three games. If they do, then we're back on guard and the Chiefs are a playoff team. And I think right now their best hope is to just find a way into the field, and they could still win the division.
Yeah, the division's still up for grabs, right.
And then the Chargers have stumbled.
Definitely.
The Chargers have lost two in a row.
And they'll continue, I think, yeah.
And so if they just get in and get the magic back in January, they could go on a run. We've seen teams do it who get one of the lower spots on the playoff tree, but there's nothing that makes me think right now it's coming back.
No, there's
nowhere magic. It could.
Right.
Now, all that said, last night's game, the win that they ultimately got on the final drive, and, you know, I don't know whether to save this for airing of grievances or not, but it was a big issue in the game. And any time that it's glaring, I want to point it out because the NFL needs to embrace, whether they call it booth umpire, sky judge, or come up with some other name. And I know they're concerned about what the full parameters would be of an extra member of the official in the booth who has the power to talk to the referee and say there was a foul that you should have called or there was a penalty that shouldn't have been called. And they're concerned about, you know, holding flags being thrown by the sky judge through the referee. That's for them to figure out how to get the margins of it right. The meat and potatoes guts is having someone in place. When 15 yards of field position is surrendered for a face mask that did not happen.
Yeah, I hear you.
Did not happen.
Right.
When you have the technology available and we all see it, and the middle-aged folks with no helmets, no pads, trying to survive among the gladiators out while it's all whizzing by them, and they see a head movement that is consistent with a face mask.
Yeah, right.
So they just think he must have been face masked, even though I didn't see it with my two eyes.
Right.
It must have been because of the way his head moved. Here's the flag. That's why you need someone who can say, hey, Bill, you know what? Looked like a face mask. wasn't a face mask. That 15 yards makes a huge difference. Now, look, it would have been third and one on the 38. Maybe they would have converted. Maybe they would have kept going. But when you take it from third and one and you got first and 10 on the plus side of the 50, that's a gift.
Game changer.
An undeserved, unwarranted gift. And it's so easily fixable that's what makes it even more inexcusable. And it mars the outcome of the game. It undermines the integrity of the game. It undermines the integrity of the wagers being placed through the seven sports books with whom the NFL currently has partnerships. You see all these DraftKings commercials. There's the NFL shield. I mean, at some point, they need to be concerned about the integrity of the game and the integrity of the wagering on the game. You can't make $1 billion a year, which they expect to make by the end of the decade, off of wagering with not worrying more about making sure that every outcome and every bet and every prop and every spread and every over-under is not undermined by fixable officiating mistakes. And that one last night, Chris.
Easy pick.
And I don't know, I don't know what it would cost have this.
Not that much. Future.
When you're paying $64 million a year to your public pin cushion who takes all the flack so you guys can hide behind the curtain and not have to take any grief because the commissioner will stand up there and take all the slings and arrows. When if that job's worth $64 million a year, I think they can afford what is a far more important job to ensuring the integrity of the game and the integrity of the wagering on the games.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there, Mike. I am. I mean, again, that's just like it's a horrible call to have that, you know, in that point of the game, you know, like you said, where it's an easy fix. I mean, it really is. That'd be an easy fix. There's no doubt about it. Hey, blah, 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 referee, wasn't face mask. You know, take your time here. Give a little conversation. I'm sure they might even show the replay on the board here, but it wasn't a face mask. He grabbed his jersey. It just looked like it. His head went, and boom. I mean, yes, but that's just unfortunate. It stinks. It stinks when you're in a great game like that, and then it comes down to a play like that, where, yeah, it's gifted. And, yeah, it would have been third and one, like you said, with the Chiefs. But, I mean, again, you know, nothing's a guarantee with the Chiefs right now. Nothing.
Right.
So you can't say that. I mean,
We don't know what would have happened.
You don't know,
I
mean, we think third and three at the goal line is automatic touchdown pass from Patrick Mahomes. Not this year. It's automatic almost turnover by the Chiefs every time. So, I'm with you all the way, man, and I just think it's an easy fix, and you're right, it's just stupid. It's pennies what it would cost them on the big scheme of things.
And what, you know, it's funny, too, because when I point that out, the reaction by some is, oh, you must have money on the Giants. I picked the Chiefs to win, but I want the game to be decided by the players and the coaches, not by officials,
not the referees,
who make mistakes.
Right.
Now, look, and it seemed like after every play last night, I looked down at the bug at the bottom, and I just expected it to go yellow in the corner and flag to come up, because every play it was flag, flag, flag. If they're committing fouls, then you need to throw the flag. But if they're not committing fouls and you're giving up 15 yards of field position, that's and it's fixable, that's a problem. And
that's another issue with
the Chiefs. It's funny because I was talking to my wife about this last night because she's a casual fan. She said, well, it was a close game. What happened? So it's like, well, you made the mistake of asking me, so you're going to hear all about it now.
Right.
And, you know, I just wonder, do they care? Do the stewards of the game care? Do they care about getting all of this right? Or is their attitude, it's fine. They'll keep watching the games. They'll keep showing up for the games. They'll keep following their teams. Because you know what? Bad calls are part of it. Hey, you know, sometimes a bad call goes against you. Sometimes it goes for you. And it's a weird mindset, but I think it makes much more sense to strive to get it right, especially when the answer is so easy. Now, it could be that they truly are concerned about trying to fix it because they're too incompetent to fix it right. The buzzword is unintended consequences when they do something like this.
Yeah.
I think that's cover for, you know what? Look at what we did with pass interference replay review in 2019. We're probably going to screw it up. We're probably going to make it worse. So, you know, that leaky pipe in the bathroom that we got to put a little pot under every once in a while, that's better. That's better than us trying to fix it and flooding the whole house. Now look, it looks like a face mask.
I get it.
Yes. And it's like the hand hit the bottom of it and the head went that way. But it's prime reason to have the procedure in place to say it wasn't. And how long would that take? How long would it take? Hey, Bill, it wasn't. Pick it up. It's that simple. You can do it in the 40 seconds between plays.
We see it all the time. We see it all the time. And it's a lot of the times it's not even a guy in the stadium. It's New York telling them. So it's like it's easy. And like, Mike, I'm with you. I think at some point, yeah, the game is not a perfect game. It is imperfect. So I think there is a little bit of that old school thought in the NFL that like, hey, it's just, you know, sometimes you get a call, sometimes you don't. That's great. That was cool in 1985. We're out of that, aren't we? Like, let's evolve as a sport. Let's not lace a chain link to, like, figure out the first down. Let's not have 74 cameras to figure out if the ball crossed the most important line on the field. Let's figure it out and spend that. Because to your point, Mike, and I'm a traditionalist, but, like, the game world has changed, and it's just going to cause more issues for them in the end. It's going to cause more issues.
That's the thing that they need to realize.
Yeah,
and
because
the fact
people
that they got Congress up their butts over the Washington Football Team investigation is the glimpse as to what's going to happen eventually with gambling.
Yeah,
and
no doubt.
And you can't say then, well, that's just the way we've always done it.
Yeah.
Or, you know, we accept a certain amount of error from our officials because it's human nature. It's human errors. It's human factors. And that's part of what makes our game great. No, it's not. And you know, as to the whole 10 yards of chain link to determine a first down, I know for a fact that there are people high up in the league who love the moment when that chain gets pulled and put down, that's built-in drama. Everybody's like, ooh, is it going to make it? Is it not going to make it? And
no, I mean, boring. It's boring is what it is. And it's
the
like
game, it, the
my
game
kid
itself
wants to hit start,
the drama.
And the kids and me, I want to hit A, B, X, whatever. So I don't need to see the measuring on the video game. Just let's play the game. Like nobody wants to see it. Move on.
Yeah.
Move on and get it more exact. And there's too much money riding on it. And you're going to open up Pandora's box to where everybody's going to be like, man, this doesn't seem right. This one team got all the calls today. Like it's not right. Sky Judge could have fixed that last night. Sky Judge could fix some of the dumb calls we see where, the quarterback got hit in the head and you realize he got hit in the upper shoulder or something. Like, there's so many ways where he could just make the game cleaner, and it's going to help them avoid controversy. I don't know how we got down this road, but either way.
No, it's important.
Yeah.
It's important because they want us to shut up. Next bright, shiny object is coming Thursday night, although Jets-Colts not as bright and shiny as maybe it could be.
How
not like last week, but still.
Yeah.
You know, hey, don't get bogged down with the inefficiencies and the mistakes. Let's focus on the fact that, you know, we got more football to come and more football to come and more football to come. Now,
technology
is not perfect.
Right.
Technology is not perfect. And here's Joe Judge after the game. Complaining about something that I don't quite understand. Let's have a listen to Joe Judge, and then we'll try to figure it out on the other side.
Joe, so what happened on the timeout there in the first half?
The headsets are going out. No, we're having headset issues. This happened in every game so far. So we deal with the league, and they keep telling us there's different software updates or whatever it is. But we had to call two timeouts today because we're trying to send the deals in personnel-wise, and you got half the headsets aren't getting the reception. So that's the issue right there. So we're trying to make sure we're in the right call. There were some other times we just didn't like the look. Want to make sure we settled down on. But the other one's talking about with the substitution deals right there. Yeah, it's breakdowns, and we got to make sure the hardware is working. So whatever the issue with that is, you know, people involved with that better get it fixed fast.
Yeah, kind of a vague excuse, and it feels like an excuse from Joe Judge. It may be an accurate one, but I don't know how the head coach of a team in the NFL halfway through a season that is having a chronic issue with the hardware of his headsets doesn't know exactly what. Think of what, and his mentor Bill Belichick would know exactly what the issue is, who's to blame, who's accountable, what they need to do to fix it. It sounds like they're getting the message back from the league. Oh, well, it's not our issue, or well, no, we fixed it. It's no problem. But you'd think halfway through the season they'd have drilled down to this because it seems like a fairly important thing if your headsets are cutting out on you in every game, regardless of what stadium you're in. They can't blame it on Bill Belichick.
But the NFL runs
that stuff. Reed.
See, that's what the NFL runs it. See, that's where I'll get behind them a little bit there. It's so I don't know. You're right. I mean, there's obviously.
How are we finding out about this now, then?
I don't know. We've seen other games, though, here recently, and I got to think about them again because I know we've had other coaches make these. Like, our headsets went out. Like, nobody. I don't know. Again, I don't know where that's going or whatever. Either way, yeah, they got down to the end of the game and didn't have time. Yeah, was it Shanahan in the Monday night game or Sunday night game, right? They challenged because the headsets went out. So, again, I don't know. Good job by Pete Demolitis there with the call there. But, yeah, I know I've seen it at least in one other time in a game too.
Right.
But I hear
But I've
you,
never
I,
heard a coach say it happens every
no,
game.
Right.
I've never heard that.
Right.
And there's a point where if it's happening every single game and you're the coach of the team and you haven't at least have – if you can't at least give us some explanation, something that's more – and maybe he doesn't want to have the – the league office, you know, they're fairly close to New Jersey. I mean, they just drive right over and, they sit down with them and say, don't, thou shalt not criticize us publicly. But at some point, you got to know what's going on if you're the coach of the team. And there's nothing in that answer that inspires confidence in me that the guy who has the most reason to know exactly what's going on knows what's going on. I'd like to think halfway through the season, he would know not necessarily what the fix is, but at least what the problem is.
Yeah.
Other than our headsets keep going out.
I hear you, Mike. I hear you there all the way. And I mean, again, I don't know, you know, what the deal was. It seems like he was referring more to the ones in the first half anyways. The second half, you know, the second half, that just seemed like they were worried about making a stop on Kansas City with Mahomes and company, and they wasted, you know, two timeouts on the defensive side of the ball trying to stop them. They didn't like a call. I think that's what he was referring to there. So I hear you. I mean, I hear you all the way. But to not have a timeout late in the game certainly came back to kind of, you know, bite them in the butt and give their offense a chance to maybe make something happen.
And it really is a thing of beauty when we see a Tom Brady or an Aaron Rodgers, a Patrick Mahomes, a Russell Wilson engineer a late game drive. And we kind of take it for granted to the point where we expect it now. Balanced against that is what we saw the past two nights from the Vikings and then from the Giants, where you got the ball, you got some time, and it...
I mean, the Giants had no chance
at
the end.
It's just a mess.
I mean, no chance,
well,
you know. I mean,
well,
when
they never got
ball.
Started.
Right.
You
right.
got to hit a 25-yarder.
Right.
You need an Aaron Rodgers dropping that ball into Devontae Adams like he did back when the 49ers played the Packers on Sunday Night Football, week 3, I think it was, when he dropped it. You know, it just shows you the difference between an average to below average quarterback and the best in the game. The best in the game find a way with less than a minute and no timeouts to get in position for a field goal. And I guess we get spoiled by that. We get conditioned by that. And we start to expect that other guys are going to do it. And Daniel Jones had no chance to even get it done.
No chance. I mean, like on this play, I don't care. We could bring Superman, Elway, Marino, combine Rodgers, Mahomes, Josh Allen. Like, there's some plays that I just want to go, there's no hope. I don't care who it is. It just doesn't matter. You know, the Giants, again, it goes back to their offensive line issues. They have to play a game on the offensive side of the ball that's very ordinary because they're incapable of blocking anybody in any way. So that's where that comes. Like the Giants in those situations, you know, I mean, again, I don't expect a whole lot right now because it's one of the worst O-lines in football and they got no chance of holding up in those situations. One thing I will say, too, about this, I don't know if you peeped this a little bit last night, but I will say this about Kansas City, what I did like, one thing here. Chris Jones played more defensive tackle last night. I don't know. Maybe, Pete, you could look up the numbers. I'm not looking up numbers. I'm just telling you my eye saw him inside more last night, and he affected more plays. That's a positive for the Kansas City Chiefs. But either way, yes. I mean, again, I don't know. It doesn't matter to me in those situations right there. Daniel Jones and company had no hope. No hope with the way that offensive line plays, protects, run blocks, any of it there. And, you know, the Chiefs get the win.
He had 42 snaps last night on defense, 70% of the total. You know, we'd have to
yeah, Pete'll look
elsewhere to get
the
full breakdown of DT or D, but he had a sack on that last drive.
Yeah, disrupted
and stepped
a lot of plays,
up
too.
At the right moment.
Got the F the play up stat going, like we talked about. We haven't talked about it a lot this year.
where are the Giants right now in your mind?
The Giants are like a team that has some pieces to get you excited, but like, are certainly missing a number of pieces to make you think that, you know, they're a step away from being a legit contender. You know, again, I think, you know, you start off there. Listen, I'm always going to start off on the offensive defensive side of the ball, like with the offensive lines. Offensive line gives them almost no chance on a weekly basis. They have to play a style on offense and do things to totally protect them. They can't open it up because of them. And if you don't have a healthy Kenny Golladay or Saquon or Kadarius Toney, it's kind of hard to hide that. So the Giants have some pieces you like. Defensively, yeah, like it's solid unit. It's well coached. But they lack like superstar or a playmaker, you know. And to me, again, that's where the league is at to a degree. The league is so equal. And that's where I think like the Rams are a step ahead of the game right now, where they go, yeah, we might not have all this depth of stuff, but we're gonna err on a game being close and our playmakers and our studs making plays for us to help us win the game. And I know we're gonna talk about next segment. But the Giants on the defensive side of the ball, yeah, Leonard Williams is really good, but there's no like threat on the defensive end or pass rusher to go, wow, look at that guy. Same thing in the secondary. So to me, you know, there's certainly some vital pieces that miss from making me think like, ooh, they're close, the Giants.
Who's in danger there? Is it just Dave Gettleman, the GM? Is Joe Judge? This is only his second season. Yeah,
I know.
I don't like the idea of a new GM.
I hear you.
I don't like the idea of a new GM and keeping the head coach.
Your thought's very real there. I think that thought's very real. I know a lot of smart people in the NFL that think the same thing you do, and I don't think it's wrong. But I do think, like, you know, and again, yeah, I worked with Joe Judge. I know the guy, but I back him a little bit because I know the guy. I know how much football he knows, you know, and you saw the game. Yeah, the timeouts weren't perfect.
Doesn't every NFL head coach know a lot of football?
No, they don't.
No,
they don't. Not a lot of them do, you know, and again, you know, look at that game last night. They're undermanned, but they manage it the right way and play the right style with a bunch of guys where if I just took, like, Joe Schmo from the middle of the country and go, who's playing in the secondary for the Giants? They'd go, who's playing defensive lineman for the Giants? They'd go, you know, who's the best offensive line on the Giants? I know Saquon Barkley. Oh, okay, great. You know him, right? That's one guy. Whoa, good job. So that's, to me, you know, is where it falls back on right now, more than anything.
Let me be candid,
yeah,
though.
Yeah.
In a year and a half,
yeah,
of Joe Judge as coach, right, of the Giants, there hasn't been a single moment where I've said, damn, that's impressive. Whether it's anything he's said or anything he's done or any decision he's made, there isn't one time that stands out to me that I thought, wow, I'm impressed by that guy. And at some point, you got to do something to show us you belong. And he's not done anything yet, Chris, to show me that he belongs.
Yeah, well, I mean, again, I'll disagree with that because I'm one of the guys.
Give me an example. Well, give me an example.
I mean, again, last year, I mean, they played in a lot of games where they competitive and, like, hung around teams that they had no business to.
What's he supposed to do, though?
Like, what's he supposed to do? He's doing the best with the ingredients he has, you know? When you can't block or do anything up front that way, yeah, it's struggle. They got a quarterback.
Coach him up.
Okay.
Teach him better technique.
You know,
teach him Patriots technique.
They are,
right? Patriots,
Mike,
don't have.
I think that's where
don't have five blocks of granite.
They're teaching that. That's why the game's 20-17 last night. You know, I don't know. I could name coaches. I think you put them on the Giants head coach, and I'd go, well, they lose by more than 20-17 if they don't have that coaching staff with that same team. That's just the way I look at it. The defensive game plans are usually right. You know, the offensive game plans are right for what they do. But again, I just think they don't have the horses necessarily to compete, you know, with some of the big boys.
The smartest thing he said this year is the fish stinks from the head down. He's just wrong when he considers himself the head of the fish. That's all I'm going to say about that. Let's go ahead and take a break. When we return, trade deadline comes today. We got a little surprise yesterday. We'll break down the trade that shook up the AFC West and the NFC West and the rest of the NFC when PFT Live continues right after this.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing.
That's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.
You know, surprising. You know, I love, you know, the Denver Broncos. You know, it's just, you know, all the everything is just still, you know, new. And, you know, it's hard to, you know, really put the emotions into words. You know, this is all I know. This is, you know, this is all I, you know, ever knew playing pro sports. Here with the Denver Broncos, you know, been here through the ups and the downs. And, you know, it's always tough whenever you leave, though. But I love all my fans. I love Broncos country. When I said Broncos for life, I meant that. And it'll always be on my heart. It's an honor and a privilege to, you know, play here. John Elway picked me in, and, you know, it's life-changing. Yeah, ever since then, you know, being able to play with Peyton Manning, DeMarcus Ware, Champ Bailey, Brian Dawkins, Tim Tebow, you know, all of these guys, man. And it's an honor and a privilege. And, you know, it's still kind of hard to put in words. It's still kind of raw, but, you know, I thank you. Thank everybody, you know, and, you know, off to L.A.
I did a double take when I saw that last night and he mentioned Tim Tebow, but he was a rookie. Von Miller, in his first year during Tebow Mania, that would have an impact, and this trade has an impact. Von Miller gone. The Broncos get the Rams' second round and third round pick in 2022. The Rams don't have a first round pick in 2022. You can just say the Rams don't have a first round pick and insert any year you want at this point. This is what Rams do.
Right?
They trade their lottery tickets. Instead of scratching them off and then having developed those players, they trade them for proven commodities.
Yeah.
That's their thing.
That's what they do.
Now they get a guy. Now that's a lot to give up, though, for a guy in the last year of his contract who's 32. The other side of this is there's $9.7 million remaining in salary this year for Von Miller. The Broncos are paying $9 million of it. So they're buying those two picks for $9 million bucks and surrendering the presence of Von Miller, Chris. So a surprise. And I think this one was in the works for a while. Because in hindsight, remember, they were giving us this weird impression they were buyers last week when they trade for defensive end Stephen Weatherly. They trade for Rams linebacker Kenny Young, and it felt like the Rams didn't get enough for him. I think they were bolstering in advance. Instead of trading Von Miller yesterday and then scrambling to backfill afterward when you're desperate, go ahead and make those moves ahead of time, get those guys, and then do the Von Miller trade after that. So I think that's the explanation. They weren't being buyers. They were just trying to replace what happens to their defense without Von Miller.
Yeah. No, I think you're probably right when you look back at it. But, I mean, first off, I guess, yes, second and third round pick. Wow, that's pretty expensive for a guy, you know, like Von Miller at this point of his career. You know, the second thing I thought of, well, they must – think that maybe they can sign him back after the year for some sort of, you know, deal that makes sense for them. I mean, the Rams aren't stupid. I just have a hard time thinking they're going to be a second and third round pick for like nine games, right? Is that what it's going to equal out to be? I just can't imagine that big. So we've seen teams
throw away a second round pick for nine. Mohamed Sanu, Emmanuel Sanders,
sure.
Your 49ers gave up a third round pick for half a season with him. It's not unprecedented.
No, I know. It's not unprecedented. It's not. And I mean, I guess, you know, when the final prize is the Super Bowl, you know, maybe they don't care. That's the cool thing about the Rams. I mean, again, I think you kind of said it right. They're about proven commodities. They've kind of said the hell with the draft, and I think they trust their draft and their ability to, like, draft mid-level, mid-round players and have an eye to go, well, yeah, this, look at this, look at our team. We got all guys in fourth and fifth round who play and contribute. So there's obviously confidence there. But, man, this puts them, to me, you know, a little bit in another stratosphere. Their defense has been playing a lot better the last few weeks. They've definitely gotten things straightened out. And now you have another presence on this other side of the field from Leonard Floyd and Aaron Donald. I just look at that and just go, wow, it's a game-changing move. A game-changing move that is going to cause problems, and they got a lot of talent and speed on that defense. And now you got to worry about not only the creativity and stuff they do, but how you're going to block three guys who can win three one-on-one matchups, you know, more times than they don't. And that's what's really going to help the Rams out.
It's been a few years, but I vividly recall Von Miller complaining about all the extra attention he got during the prime of his career. He'd get hit by three different guys on his way to the quarterback, and that's not going to happen now because the guy in the middle is the one who's getting hit by three different guys. So he is going to have a freer path. And we know how important it is to have your pass rush ready to go when it's time to hit the postseason. We get reminded of it every few years with a great defensive performance, specifically a great performance up front, whether it was Von Miller's Broncos in Super Bowl 50 against the Panthers or the Buccaneers last year against the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah.
If you have that pass rush that can get home consistently in a big game like that, you're going to win that game.
I think, to me, Mike, I mean, I think you're dead on. I think that's why they make the move. And again, that's why I like the Rams. They kind of look at the year and go, wait, we need this. Okay, wait, if we want to get where we want to go, we need this because it's going to help us beat these teams who are orchestrated like that. And let me figure it out. How could they not be looking within the own conference right now and going, wait, if we're going to beat the Bucs, the Cowboys, and let's say the Cardinals and throw them in the mix, you know, with just that weaponry, I'm using these teams. I know Green Bay is one of the top teams too. I get it, but they don't have the weaponry that the teams I just mentioned there. I think they got to look at that and go, if we expect to win a playoff football game against them, we got to be able to get to the quarterback with four, like you're saying. We're not going to be able to match up across the board against all these weapons man-to-man. We're going to have to do creative things on the back end. And now you got guys like Leonard Floyd and Von Miller who, yeah, can come off the edge and rush the passer with the best of them, but are also going to be great little pieces. And like the Raheem Morris has these great blitz, you know, two guys come this way, two guys drop that way and play coverage to where, you know, it's going to help their scheme out because Miller can drop back into pass coverage as good as any outside linebacker in football. He's still a really good all-around football player. And you add him with Leonard Floyd and, like you said, Aaron Donald in the middle of that whole thing there. They're going to be tough. They're going to be tough, and we already know they already are tough and arguably the best team in football.
Here's Rams coach Sean McVay talking about the Von Miller trade and the team's propensity to ship their draft picks to other cities.
You talk about we don't value picks. That's not true at all. We do value picks, but there is a formula to a lot of the things that we're doing behind the scenes, that there's a vision in place, and we feel like it fits for us. And it might not be for everybody, but I think it's been a real credit to those guys to have the agility and the flexibility to figure out creative avenues of being able to onboard a player of Von Miller's caliber and saying, okay, we'll give you these picks. You take a certain portion of the salary, and there's a lot of nuances to it, most of which are way above my head, Jordan. But, hey, let's go.
No, they definitely value picks because of what they can get for them.
Yeah, that's right.
They just don't want to use them. You know, other teams will say they're afraid to use high-round picks because they don't want to be criticized for getting them wrong. And maybe that's one of the byproducts of using the first overall pick on Jared Goff. I don't know. but their peers look at them and say they're afraid to use those picks because they are not sufficiently confident that they're going to go out and consistently get the right players. The response to that is nobody is confident they're going to consistently get the right players. Look at the bust rate in round one.
Yeah, right. And you know what I can tell you is those picks, right? Like, let's go back at those picks. Jalen Ramsey's doing really good on the football field. Oh, he's working out. Oh, Matthew Stafford, it's working out on the football field right now, let alone for years to come. So I mean, again, they're doing it
a different way. A lot to give up, though.
I know.
A lot to give up. They had to give up first round. And this is the other thing that they don't want people talking about. They had to give up a first round pick to get rid of Jared Goff.
So what?
They tucked it into that marriage, that Matthew Stafford deal. But they gave up a first round pick to get rid of a contract they never should have given the guy.
No, that's on them. That's a mistake. Yeah, but at least they just said, hey, finally, and they took the Band-Aid off and made a move and got rid of it. Because now they got a quarterback that's twice as good and he's always making half as much. I mean, it's so I think you look at it right now and go, wait, you know, okay, yeah, it wasn't the best, and we gave away another first-round pick, but they got a franchise quarterback for the next 5 or 6 years. And I think that's where, you know, again, maybe they're ahead of the curve with this a little bit. Maybe they're going to do a different approach where they look at the league like we were talking about a little bit ago, going, it's so equal. It's so equal. We have a good coach. We know we can be competitive, but at the end of the day, like, you know, the coaching and the scheme can't always win you a football game. It can't. At some point, like, I've only seen New England be able to do that on a consistent basis. At some point, like, you got to have players to make plays. Who's going to make, you know, a 40-yard Randy Moss-type catch, or who's going to get the strip sack fumble? And I think that's the philosophy they believe in, and I think that's how they look at it, to like get them over the hump in big games, to get them back to the Super Bowl. And I can get behind that. I mean, it's been working for them, and I'm not going to doubt them now when they're arguably the best team in football.
Scale of 1 to 10, how surprised will you be if they have Odell Beckham Jr. when we're having this conversation?
I guess I'd be surprised. I'd be surprised. I would. I don't see them going that crazy.
Scale of 1 to 10, how surprised would you have been if I told you yesterday they'd have Von Miller today, though?
Well, yeah, you're right. You're right. I wouldn't have been expecting that. Now, I wouldn't be, you know, one other thing, too. I mean, DeSean Jackson, we know he wants to be traded there. We'll see. Maybe they get
Tutu Atwell's out for the year.
Maybe so. That changes things. That does change things. We'll see where it goes. Yeah. But either way, I admire the Rams' ability to push the chips in the middle of the table, like we say so often, and just say, screw it. We're going for it. We're good. We're trying to win the Super Bowl this year.
Here's what I want to know. Who else was in play? Did other teams have an opportunity, or was this kind of an inside job where the Broncos targeted the Rams? Maybe they knew the Rams would be the ones to do it. The Rams would be more inclined to do something like this, give up future picks for a guy in his early 30s in the last year of his contract. Or, you know, did the Packers have a shot at Von Miller? And what did Aaron Rodgers think about the fact that they didn't shoot their shot to get Von Miller? There's a story behind the story that we don't know yet as to how widespread the discussions were. But, you know, when you get into an arms race, if there's a missile available and one of your competitors is going to buy it, you're thinking maybe I should buy it first. So I'm curious to know whether the Packers had a shot at him. Not that the Bucs could have pulled it off. Could the Cowboys have pulled? Wouldn't that have been something? Bring him back to Texas? Oh, my gosh. Add Von Miller to the Cowboys defense? Are you kidding me? I'd just love to know who else would have, could have, should have potentially had a chance to get Von Miller instead of the Rams.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be interesting. I would like to know, too. I mean, I don't know what that team is. He's certainly, to me, not the superstar he was, but still a really good football player. And he does a lot of different things well for your defense, and that's where he's going to be awesome for them. He is, but you're right. I mean, you'd think that there'd be some other teams involved in that conversation, but maybe, Mike, like you talked about, this was kind of in the works for the last, you know, week or so. That was part of maybe the Kenny Young trade, and hey, here's this for this, and we got this coming down the road. So that was a part of the puzzle. I don't know, but the Rams, man. Well, what a football team, and I think this puts them a little bit in another stratosphere in my eyes.
Well, I've added to my list of things to do today to try to find out who else was involved in these trade talks. Was it just the Rams, or did other NFC teams have an opportunity, or AFC teams for that matter? It's not like the Broncos are one of the elite teams in the AFC that has to worry about trading Von Miller, you know, to the Ravens or something like that. You're getting value for a guy who's not going to be with you next year, and you're not one of the elite teams. You could justify it. So I'm going to try to find out what other teams were involved. Now, teams may or may not make trades today. Maybe yesterday's move sparks an arms race, a land rush. More deals to be done today. Matt LaFleur, the Packers coach, yesterday said they're working the phones as the trade deadline approaches. The names that I've been keeping an eye on, obviously Deshaun Watson. I still think the two teams involved are too damn dysfunctional to land the plane because they almost did last week. And I reported this on Sunday night. We wrote about it Sunday night. And if you know, other media outlets just want to ignore when we report something that's pretty damn significant, that's up to them. But you know, when somebody's got the kind of detail that we have on this, I'm either fabricating it or it's dead on balls accurate, frankly. Last week, they were close to getting a deal done. They were closing in on a deal. And the Miami Dolphins want the 22 civil lawsuits to be settled. And one of the things, and I knew this last Sunday, I was trying to hint at it. I wasn't authorized to talk about it per se.
I know you weren't.
But the reason the Panthers were in play was because if Watson decided I'm not settling these cases, that's when the Panthers became a viable option because they're willing to take him, or let me conjugate that properly, they were willing to take him at the time with the lawsuits not resolved. He decided last week, I'm going to get these cases resolved. I'm going to do what I have to do. Remember, the sticking point was he wanted everything to be transparent. The other side wanted confidentiality. He's willing to say, I'll make it confidential. The Dolphins wanted the cases settled. Well, then the Texans caught wind of the fact that they're working towards settling these cases. And the Texans drove up the price. Now, they didn't have a deal. They didn't renege on a deal or anything like that. And I'm not saying what the Texans did was wrong, because if the Dolphins are saying, here's what we can give you because we're taking on all this uncertainty, and then the Texans find out, well, you know what? They're working behind the scenes to remove half of the uncertainty, the civil side of this two-pronged civil and criminal ongoing investigation with Deshaun Watson, then maybe you do say to the Dolphins, wait a minute, you're trying to get us to come down because you're taking on the uncertainty while you're working to rid yourself of the uncertainty. No, we're back up where we were. But that it was close to happening last Tuesday, and that killed it. And now the question is, at some point before 4 o'clock, will someone blink? Will someone pick up the phone and say, here's the deal that we'll do, and get it done? And again, I think the two teams, frankly, are too dysfunctional to land the plane.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like it's headed that way. I mean, it just, you know, again, you listen to people around the NFL, it doesn't seem like it's getting close right now. I haven't got that feel, at least from people I know around football, to where, oh, it's you know, on the verge of happening. So obviously, again, you seem to have more knowledge of me than the inner workings of what happened there. And yeah, it looks like that to the naked eye. It's a risky proposition by the Texans, certainly, you know, but I understand their ground that they're standing on. You know, again, like you've said many times, you're going to get Deshaun Watson, you're going to get him for the next 8-10 years. You're getting something special there. But at the same time, the other teams are looking at it and going, man, there's a lot of things still not settled, and we are taking on the burden of taking a guy on that's fairly controversial at this point. At a controversial time in our country and our league with a lot of these, you know, type of issues that are surrounding Deshaun Watson. So there's that aspect too. I could see both sides, you know, of course, having their doubts here.
Here's the risk.
Yeah.
That the Texans are assuming if they just decide to kick this until March, which many think they should do. What if he shows up tomorrow and says, I'm ready to play? I don't know that he will, but if I'm the Texans and I'm a properly functional football organization, I have to at least account for the possibility that this guy says, I'm showing up, because you can't put him on paid leave at the team level unless he's okay with it. All you can do at the team level is suspend him without pay for 4 games for conduct detrimental to the team if you can prove detrimental conduct, trade him or cut him. Now, you don't have to make him active. He could be inactive every week, but you can't keep him from practicing. You can't keep him from being in the facility. You can't keep him from doing things that would entail a risk of what? What? An injury that would make him unattractive in March to another team. That's the downside here for the Texans if they don't trade him. And I just hope that somebody in the organization is smart enough to realize it. And I'd like to think Nick Caserio is. You know, I think that the people above Caserio want Watson gone. And that's the other side of this. We talk about this all the time. Owners rarely say, thou shalt do this. They want the people who work for him to figure it out. I think Cal McNair, and I saw Shefty reported this. Hey, others can ignore our stories. We're not going to ignore theirs. Shefty reported that Cal McNair wants to do the deal, and Caserio's dug in. At some point, if you want to be the long-term GM of the Texans, you got to do what the guy who signs the checks wants.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I know, and you know, I would think Nick Caserio is smart enough to realize that. I understand Cal McNair; he's probably exhausted of the situation and like to be done with it. You know, there's that aspect. Yeah, it's just looming and hovering over their organization. It is a big deal. We talk about it almost once a week, no matter what, because it's one of the best players in the league who's dealing with things that we've never seen before. And it makes the Texans' names associated with that. So I can understand Cal McNair's, you know, want to get this situation over with and move on as a football team. But it's not easy, and I understand both sides here. The Dolphins, the Texans, we'll see where it goes. But, like, I don't know. My pasta and meatballs right now makes me feel like it's not going to happen today. I don't know. I don't see any signs.
I agree with you because both sides are too damn dysfunctional to land the plane, because they almost landed it last week, and they ran into fog, and they went wheels up, and they've been circling for a week, and they can't figure out how to put the wheels down. Other teams like the Rams and the Broncos, and maybe they figure it out. You know, at some point, I used this yesterday, and it makes a lot of sense. Before the missiles launch, two people got to put the keys in and turn them. And we saw it happen with the Browns and the Bengals a few years ago, where A.J. McCarron was going to go to Cleveland, and the Browns screwed it up. I mean, even if they reach a deal this morning or this afternoon, there's no guarantee that one of the two teams isn't going to screw up the communication of it to the league. We have to keep our eyes on that possibility as well. All right, we all... also have to keep our eyes on the clock. It's late. Let's take a break. When we return, did the Tennessee Titans lose the most important non-quarterback in the NFL? We'll discuss the Derrick Henry injury and absence when PFT Live continues right after this.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on Auto Trader. Just you wait. Auto Trader.